And we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter.
Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy. Our democracy is not quite yet in a shambles, but it's safe to say it's being tested. Our United States Supreme Court is under heavy scrutiny because of what is really, can we say, the character of?
Well, certainly there's a question of what ethical standards U.S. Supreme Court justices or justices anywhere ought to live within.
But is that written down anywhere, those standards?
Well, unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court sort of is a court unto itself, and no one is, and it's not beholden to anyone in particular. And so it has not set out standards for itself. It's sort of like the trust us, we're honest judges, trust us kind of an approach, which clearly, you know, you can persuade yourself that you're not being compromised, particularly when you're on an expensive yacht having a wonderful vacation. I suspect with your family, it's easy to decide that, yes, I'm doing all this, but it's not going to affect how I render my decisions.
So it's not, we don't know if it has been maybe different a couple centuries ago. We don't know because people didn't have the capabilities of investigating, maybe.
Right.
Maybe this has always been the way it is, but it's not right, is it?
Well, I think that what's really important for our judicial system in particular is not just the specific rules, but also the image and the sense that the people get in watching what's going on. It's why what's really required is that judges worry about the potential image or the potential premise that their conduct could be viewed as compromising. Not that whether it is compromising or not, but whether third parties could look at it and say, you know what, I think this fellow's compromised. And the reason for that is because we have to trust our judicial system. And look what's happening right now. We've got our entire judicial system under test. You know, it's under test because of the Trump indictments. It's under test because of the Supreme Court conduct of various Supreme Court justices. It's under test in various states because of the highly partisan conduct of Supreme Court justices around the country who have been elected now under very partisan elections rather than nonpartisan elections. So, you know, we have, as I said, we have this constitutional crisis ongoing, and a big part of it is the concern that our judicial system is not trusted by the people. And ultimately, that's the ultimate strength of a democracy.
So, Sandy, all three branches of the government of the United States is under scrutiny. How long can our nation withstand that? Has it ever gone through what it's going through right now? Is this a once in, you know, a lifetime test? Because if any of these things fail, then can we continue to talk about our democracy and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution? I mean, all those things
well,
be thrown to
Yes, I mean, things are at risk, you know, and our democracy is at risk, at least the democracy as we know it. Our the principle of the rule of law being applied universally and fairly is at risk. And, you know, we're testing it in so many ways. We're testing it with respect to the increasing divide between those who have and those who don't, you know, the increasing divide between the wealthy and everyone else. We have an increasing divide in terms of our willingness to trust our judicial system. We have a great deal of skepticism about whether our elected officials are actually responsive to us. I mean, there's so many ways that our current democratic system is under test. And I think what's really horrifying is the willingness now of some political leaders, Donald Trump being one in particular, willing to put into the ultimate test our democratic system when we have so many frayed edges. And I would also sort of in the same way accuse President Biden, Joe Biden, of being a bit selfish, because I think it's what's very clear is that to the extent that Donald Trump is going to get the nomination, the person that he could most potentially likely defeat in a general election is Joe Biden. If Joe Biden decided that he had accomplished what he could accomplish, that he's had a long and illustrious career, and if he decided to announce tomorrow that he was not going to run for re-election and that he would open the Democratic primary up for the selection of a new and different candidate, I can almost assure you that whoever that candidate would be would beat Donald Trump handily. Okay, so I think what we have right now are two kind of selfish men putting their own political futures ahead of the country.
So, Sandy, none of this bodes well for a country that, 50% of the people vote?
Well, it's been a little more than that. Yeah. In the last election, when we had a great deal of interest, in fact, one of the reasons Donald Trump can run around saying the election was rigged is that so many more people voted
than normal
that he decided that must be rigged. He didn't understand that they voted because they didn't want him to be president again.
So as we struggle to try to get more people to participate, this doesn't bode well with what's playing out before us, right? There's nobody who hasn't voted and who's watching this play out. All of a sudden said, oh, yeah, now I want to vote. It's actually, I think, pushing more people away.
Yeah, I mean, here's my problem, having traveled around the world, gone to some poor places, talked to people in Russia and other places. Everybody around the world who's in any situation that is not favorable to them, anyone who doesn't live in Northern Europe, wants to come to the United States and live. We have bountiful opportunity. We have bountiful resources. We have a government whose design is very attractive. We have principles of government, which if we were applying them, are really outstanding. And what are we doing? We're putting it all at risk. You know, we are squandering this great place that we've got, and we're putting it all at risk. And we're putting it at risk now. We're putting it at risk for some selfish individuals.
And future. I mean, really, at the root of this, is the damage that we are doing long-term, Sandy, and to the future of those who come after us. I mean, we're ruining this. And I don't know how you know, like you say, put the genie back in the bottle. I don't know if any of that is possible. I know I talk to a lot of people, man, they're more and more disenchanted with this. And they blame the entire government for it. And I don't think it is the entire government's.
Well, but you would think that the Lindsey Grahams and the people who are not directly involved with this would step back and responsibly put the country ahead of individuals. The fact of the matter is that if the Republicans pulled the plug on Donald Trump and ran someone else, they'd probably have a better chance of winning as well. I mean, how did we get ourselves into this situation where we've got a couple of individuals, and one in particular, calling the shots for the country and basically threatening the country's democracy if they don't get their way and if they aren't allowed to assert their power.
And you know, the other part of it, Sandy, is truly not exactly the most brilliant man that we have. He's not, you know, and I'm not saying that Joe Biden is either. But clearly, just listening to the mentality of Donald Trump, it's almost like you're dealing with a child. If you don't give me what I want, I'm going to burn it all down. You know, I don't care about the rest of everybody else. I could care less. It's me against the world, and I'm going to be the winner.
Well, but, you know, leaders who tap into anger and fear have strong weapons at their disposal, and people sort of check their brains at the door when they start acting out of anger and fear. Everyone knows that. Psychiatrists know that. Parents know that.
Yeah.
Children even know it. You know, when they get angry or fearful, they no longer act sensibly. And so what we've got in this country are a lot of people who are angry and or fearful, who are now subject to being led by someone who wants to deploy those emotions for their own benefit.
So, Sandy, when we get back, I want to talk about something you and I talked about 6 months ago that came to fruition recently, and that's the United States losing its AAA rating.
Yeah.
It happened. We're going to talk about the outcome and the fallout from that. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny skies this afternoon with a high of 83. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy skies tonight. Lows level off around 62. Mainly cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 81. Chance for scattered storms Sunday. Chance for scattered showers on Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 72 degrees.
This summer,
540.
Thank you.
you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday, that means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy...
Well, you mentioned the credit downgrade before we went to break. And yeah, Fitch, one of the credit agencies, downgraded the U.S. Treasuries from the financial rating from AAA to AA+. It's still the highest ranking of any of the government debts around the world. But it portends the fact that there is the potential that the conduct of the U.S. government in the way they are going about, for instance, deciding about whether they're going to pay their outstanding debt, you know, the debt ceiling issue, that's what Fitch was responding to. They said that the downgrade was because the government kept flirting with not meeting the debt ceiling requirement that it be increased so that we could continue to service our debt. Earlier, several years ago, there was a downgrade by Standard & Poor's. They had a more chilling kind of reason for it. They said they were downgrading. One of the reasons was because we were running such large deficits that they thought that in the long term we did not have a sustainable budgetary pattern. So when you take those two things together, you realize that yeah, there are people out there, the people who are responsible for buying our debt and supporting our deficits, who are putting some questions in play about how creditworthy we are. There's one other thing that's ongoing in the world that is concerning, and that is that BRICS. BRICS is this movement that was at the heart of it. It's Russia, Brazil, India, China, and South Africa. The BRICS is that's what the initials are, and their intent on setting up a new currency, a currency that would be issued essentially by the BRICS nations, and that would be a counter currency to the U.S. dollar as a reserve. And now they're talking about expanding BRICS. There are those who are Saudi Arabia's potentially going to join BRICS and some other of the major players in the world economy. And to the extent that that would succeed and it would erode the U.S. dollar as the world currency, then we have a serious financial issue. That coupled with these downgrades, that coupled with the erosion of interest in investing in U.S. treasuries. One of the reasons that U.S. treasuries do so well right now is that the world carries lots of dollars because the dollar is the world currency. And when they carry dollars in their reserves, they invest them in U.S. treasuries. And so if we lose that flywheel for our economy, our stock market, our debt market, and our treasuries will all suffer.
So Sandy, we're right here. The election is what, less than a year? Well, not less than a year, but
well, primaries. We've got a debate coming up in a month, don't we?
Let me ask you about the primaries, Sandy. And you know, I was listening to Tim Scott. And I had already, I've known about Tim Scott for a long time. He's, and what he's come through, and clearly, he came from pretty tough background. He's pushed all the right buttons to get to where he is, and Tim Scott, still somehow believes there's a chance that he's going to win the nomination, and you listen, and I've listened to a few others on the right, and some of them don't sound too bad. They've got some guys who make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they so afraid to say, you know, if they say the wrong thing to Donald Trump, it's the kiss of about Donald Trump is the kiss of death.
Well, because
you can't win unless you know. I reached out, by the way. I want to let you know. I reached out to Chris Christie. I'm trying to get him on the air.
Well, that you know, to be honest with you,
or Friday.
I think Chris Christie's a breath of fresh air.
That's what I said.
In terms of being able to be a truthsayer, at least, and you know, and more power to him. I think more people, in politics ought to have the courage to say what everyone is willing to think, and many, but most people aren't willing to say. And my hope is that he will inject a bunch of truth serum into the process and at least get people to think, okay? But what we've got now is the process in which Trump really is the leader of what some people call a cult. That sounds like a negative term. But he's got a bunch of people who will do essentially what he says. You know, when he describes it as a witch hunt, people will...
7, The Maggie Dodd Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, you know, we haven't talked much about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. And people keep pushing this narrative that it's absolutely 100% certain that we've got Hunter Biden as a bag man and Joe Biden being with him.
The Biden crime family scenario?
Biden crime family. And people constantly say that I see, you don't ever talk about that. Why don't you talk about it? Do they have facts on that, Sandy?
Well, there's some of the facts. It's a little bit like January 6th. Some of the facts are there in plain sight that we all know about. The Burisma board. Well, the overpayment for the Burisma board, the ability to sell paintings without being a painter for $500,000, a bunch of things that certainly smell, okay?
Yeah, but did Joe Biden
And then the question is whether Joe did. And this most recent witness seems to have painted the picture fairly clearly that there was something that Hunter Biden was selling along with his friend of his that he was in partnership with, which was the Biden brand, okay? And clearly the Biden brand is dependent upon just one person, Joe Biden, right? Because Hunter Biden isn't an important person named Biden unless his father is vice president of the United States. What is clear is that the kid was selling his access and selling the notion that he had access to Joe Biden and that the Biden brand could accomplish things. Whether Joe participated in that or not is not yet proven, is an open question. This guy in his testimony in the last couple of days made it clear that whereas Joe would readily accept calls from Hunter and they would be in a business context, Hunter might be sitting with some important official from China and he'd pick up the phone, call up his father, and put him on the speakerphone, and then his father and he would talk about the weather or about how nice it was to be in Beijing or whatever, but apparently not about the business details, okay? So what do we have? We've got something that smells, but we don't have flames yet, and maybe there never will be flames. But my view is that this sort of further amplifies the notion that if I were Joe Biden, I would maybe decide that someone else should take the next term in office, that I am going to be old, that I am succeeded mightily in my first term. I've accomplished a lot of good things, that there are complications and baggage associated with me running for re-election, including my age, including the Hunter Biden situation. Whether or not they ever get to flames, There's the smoke there that is an issue. But is that going to happen? I think it probably isn't going to happen. I don't think that the Republicans, in their pursuit of this proof of Joe Biden's involvement, are going to succeed. That doesn't mean that it couldn't be proven. I just don't think that there's the facts out there that will prove it.
You know, Sandy, from everything I've been able to gather from this, they've been at this long before Biden even became president. They've been digging into this.
Right, right. Well, I mean, in fact, the effort to get Ukraine to cooperate in carrying out a, you know, the famous Trump to Zelensky phone call was all about pushing this very kind of investigation. So, you know, it could well be that Joe Biden has been fastidiously careful about ever personally being involved in any actual business dealings. He's allowed his brother and his son to profit out of being Biden's, but maybe he's been very meticulously careful about never letting it bend him in his conduct of his public business.
Let's go to Paul from Waukesha. Good morning to you, Paul. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning. How are you, Earl?
All right. How are you?
I got to say, I'm kind of shocked to hear what your guest is having to say.
What do you mean?
Well, guest?
Co-host.
He's my co-host. I mean, obviously, he's looking at the facts, and it looks, there's smoke. And that's really kind of an odd flavor to come off the station, because most of the time, if it's against Trump, if it's true, if it's about Biden, it's not true. And I just
that's
have
not
to
what
say
I
that.
Heard him say.
That's not what I was saying. I mean
off the radio station, but in regards to what he just said about what he just all said, I was rather shocked that he wasn't just downplaying it and going,
I just want to get this clear. He's still on the line. He's sitting here in the studio.
Yeah. Sandy is.
Yeah.
Still
here. Here I am.
Okay. So yeah. Sandy, he sees.
Yeah. So, I was amazed, but I kind of see Sandy as kind of a level headed guy.
Kind of.
To be honest with you, Earl,
he's more of an old style Democrat. You know, I got to tell you, I was never political until after Trump got elected. You know, I was always just kind of I really wasn't political at all. I just kind of looked back.
What happened to you then? But, I mean, did you become political pro-Trump, or how did you become political when Trump got elected?
I saw that they were going after Trump. And from what I see was the whole Russia collusion thing. Now, this has all been... this is old news that's been proven that was a wrong story, but everybody pushed it. And you guys had, there are some people today who still push that narrative of the whole Russian collusion thing. That was a fake made up thing. That was fake and made up. And honestly, from what I see, they just keep going after Trump. I don't know how the guy does it.
Don't you think though, that Trump from the beginning of his first campaign has tried to be a notorious character in terms of drawing attention to himself. So saying things that were outrageous enough to get headlines daily and basically saying things that were inflammatory. So my sense about Donald Trump is that he enjoyed the limelight and invited it by being extremely contentious and notorious in the things he said and did, which bought him exactly what he wanted, which was a great deal of confrontational activity. Didn't you see it that way?
I disagree with you. Mm. But I think he, in regards to running the country, and this is my whole thing, and my whole concern is, I don't think Biden's done that all great of a job. I mean, we're all suffering under this. I mean, there's not a recession yet. Thank God there's not a recession. I remember during the Trump years, there were certain commentators, oh, I wish a recession. Why would you wish a recession on the American public? You know, just to get back at Donald Trump, you're sacrificing everybody else. I hope Trump does not get the nomination, because I don't believe he can win. But I don't believe we can withstand another 4 years of the Biden administration either.
Well, I'm interested in that conclusion, because, you know, you say we've suffered. We have had a period of inflation which has been rather successfully terrible. Stifled. No, well, the terrible inflation was happenstantially created by a whole bunch of circumstances.
Only all kinds of things, but Biden's policies.
Global things. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I mean, my sense of the Biden administration is that it's actually been quite successful. But we still have to get Washington under control. And one of the biggest problems, and I believe Trump's tax reduction contributed mightily to it, is the level of deficits that we're carrying. And the combination of our huge deficits, our health control, our health system that's way out of control in terms of its costs, and our huge military budget, those three things combined to put us into a deep hole with respect to deficits. And so I see a problem there.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning, Bill. You say what, sir?
Good morning both of you gentlemen. This is what makes this station so wonderful. You allow people who don't agree with you to call in. Try that on a far-right station. Doesn't work.
No, it doesn't
happen. Let's just talk about Donald Trump for a minute. Before he became president, many people, myself included, knew, long before we even knew he was going to be president, when we found out, we knew he'd be a disaster. Why? Because of his resume. Between the bankruptcies, the alleged assaults, all that stuff, he had a resume unlike any other president that's ever ran for this country. So it wasn't, oh, they don't like Trump. No, they knew what Trump was going to be. They knew his history. They knew his lack of paying bills. They knew his bankruptcies. This is the best you can find. So now he's in it, and they can't understand why they're after him. The bottom line is, if you don't understand the oath of office, I pledge to protect this country from domestic terrorism. And if you say what they believe is domestic terrorism, they obviously don't understand any of this. I actually feel sorry for them. I'm not mad at them. I just feel sorry for them. How can you not understand it? But keep up having all the people that don't agree with you, Earl and Sandy, on. That makes for a great conversation. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, as always, Bill, for the conversation. You know, Sandy, I always like Paul when he calls, because Paul, even though he's a conservative, Paul generally explains he's thoughtful, and he just doesn't fly off the handle. He mm-hmm. thinks about those things that he's responding to, and he certainly makes sense from his perspective.
Well, I think it's really interesting to have people call and explain why they think how they think. We've got we have 30% of the country who wants Donald Trump. We ought to understand why.
But, you know, as he said, which was interesting.
He doesn't want Trump.
And he never followed politics before Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Let's go to David from MechOne. Good morning, David. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I agree with the sentiment. I mean, Earl, you do have the greatest variety of callers of any talk show in Southeast Wisconsin. I think that's a testament to you. And I do appreciate Sandy's level-headedness with, you know, trying to explain what's going on in the world and what's going on the other side. I don't always agree with you, Sandy, but I appreciate your thoughtfulness in trying to make your points. So I just wanted to say really quickly, in regards with everything, I think there's a lot more similarities than there are differences. And sometimes we focus way too much on issues that, you know, potentially obviously divide us. But at the end of the day, I think everybody wants to see, you know, prosperous, you know, kids that are, you know, they're learning in school, clean air and water and what have you. It's a matter of how do you get there. There's maybe a different process of trying to figure that out. But in general, I think that most people are on that same boat. It's just different ideologies on
Hey, Dave, do you think that the political apparatus is separating us even more?
I think yes, but I also believe that the media, the social media that we have, also kind of lends itself as well. We're people that normally don't have a voice. Now they can, you know, have a podcast and they can put all sorts of things out there.
Hold the thought, Dave. We've got to go to a quick break and others. We'll be right back. Well, we finally hit on something.
This summer, 540 AM.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. I can't believe we've already almost exhausted the time, but let's go back to Dave. Dave, quickly.
Thanks again, Earl. Really quickly, obviously, you have Tom from L.A. You know, I disagree with him, but, you know, he said something yesterday. He said, as a phone friend. And I think at the end of the day, and I do consider him a phone friend as well, that you can still have different ideologies, but you can still get along. That's the key to this going forward. Is it shouldn't be like a mud fight, and sometimes it is a mud fight. And you know, I've heard Bill call on Dan O'Donnell's show. And Dan could be extremely sarcastic and just kind of demeaning.
What do you mean,
can't? But I
be?
Give Bill a lot of credit for calling in on there.
Yeah.
Because at least he does offer a little different perspective on a conservative outlet radio.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and he'll get 30 seconds. He'll get 30 seconds to say what it is he wants to say.
I think, Dave, you're onto something, though, in terms of civil discourse. I do think that some of our political leaders are trying to drive that out of the system, and I would accuse Donald Trump of being that person who is not comfortable with discourse that relates to discussion of disagreement, but rather polarization. So, you know, that's my worry right now for our system and our democracy is the selfishness of people putting themselves ahead of our system, and it's worrisome.
All right, thank you very much for the call, Dave. Let's go to Tom. Tom, thank you for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, first off, this is why I say we, the people, ultimately are the government because of the fact that we can actually look at things differently, but we are collectively, our tax dollars go towards the things that should be benefiting we, the people. And with money in politics, it's going back to the corporations or to the defense contractors or whoever it is that's been, you know, bought off. Maybe these senators and congresspeople ought to wear, you know, these NASCAR suits that got logos all over them of who actually owns them. That might be a really good thing. But I have to say, too, to Dave, who I do consider a friend, I know we could sit down and have a beer together and we could both agree on money and politics. I know we could agree on a lot of different things. I look at policy. I don't look at personality. But I will tell you one thing. There is one person, and it's on video, it's on YouTube, that said, I am going to use a strategy called divide and conquer. And do we know who that was, Twiddle Hendricks? That was Scott Walker. And that was the start of breaking. I am a Wisconsinite at heart. I am a Scotty at heart. I always will be. That's probably why I call in every day, because I care so much about Wisconsin. And I also know what happens in Wisconsin, where there's a lot of sensible people and a lot of middle-of-the-road type people that they all, the big plan was if they could get Wisconsin people to turn on each other, they could probably do it in the rest of the country. And that's what they really, really were all about when they put together this plan with Scott Walker. He's the one that said it. He's the one that said, divide and conquer. We're going to employ, Widow Hendricks said, well, what can we do to make this a red state? And he said, well, we're going to devise a plan called divide and conquer. Now you tell me, that doesn't go anywhere near what Dave and I have said, or what Paul says, or, you know, any of these other people. We would like to have harmony. We would like to have a beer with each other. We'd actually like to be able to fight against the Bears when it's the Packers versus the Bears. But when it comes to our values and what we do value family. We do value different things. But there is something about collectively, that's where you can finally get to a point where you can actually discuss differences and have bipartisanship. But the thing right now is bipartisan means that both parties are bought out by the same people. So I don't agree that we can just trust the, you know, the right, because they haven't shown us any place where they can do anything for we the people. At least on the Democratic side, they have done things for the average working person. There's industries going up. There are factories coming back. There are different things happening that are really, really positive.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, we do pride ourselves in having the dialogue, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, if anything, that both the network, Civic Network, and this show, what we're trying to do is talk about policy, not about politics, talk about issues, not about people, try to bring the thing down, bring the whole level of discourse down to something that we can all communicate to one another about, and to try and understand what the hell's going on out there. You know, it's because things are going on around the world, around us, within our country, that we all need to understand better, and we could get a grip on it.
You know, Sandy, you and I been around a little while, but this time just seems so different, what is happening right now in this country. And I know the country has a history of having had other things, but this time, seems to be.
Well, you know, I try to figure out, you know, my window is closing, right? As we get older, the number of years.
Our windows are closing.
So the number of years we have ahead of us to solve problems is shortening materially. And so that makes me worry more maybe than I might. Is there time?
Right.
Is this so, you know, what can I do about this? There's a limited amount of time. But I have a feeling that perspective is not what's driving my current view of things, that actually the times right now are different, that we're frayed at more edges, that we're failing to deal with things more broadly than we used to, and that we are not cohesive enough within to necessarily get our arms around it. So I'm all for what you and I are trying to do and what the station's
right.
trying to do.
All right. Listen, we got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you again, Calvin, for another great week. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back on Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.